TalkZone.com!
Now, TalkZone presents Winning Wednesdays, featuring John Kelly and Ken Weitzner. This is the show that covers the latest sports gambling topics from a worldwide perspective and is dedicated to the hearts and minds of sports enthusiasts everywhere. Now, here are John Kelly and Ken Weitzner on TalkZone.com.
Greetings from Las Vegas, and welcome to another edition of Winning Wednesdays. I'm your host, John Kelly. I'm joined by my podcast partner, Ken Weitzner. He is the owner and operator of an internet gambling site titled Ion Gambling, or EOG.com. Ken, do I have that right? You're the owner of EOG, and if so, do you have any partners?
Well, technically, my name is not on anything having to do with ownership. So, no, I am not the owner. A corporation owns EOG.com, but I do have daily control over how the site operates.
Do I have it right that you were the owner of the prescription back in the day? That was a popular internet gambling forum that you eventually sold. Were you the sole owner of the prescription?
Yes, that would be the case, except for maybe the past 3 years there. The last 3 years I was working with the RX. I did have a silent partner who eventually bought out the entire website, which is still continuing to do well today in this tough environment.
The Shrink's not only a successful businessman, but also a successful gambler. When you gamble, Ken, do you gamble as an individual, or do you operate as a team? Are you one of these who like to gamble as a group, pool your money with others, and then maybe split up responsibilities, or are you just a solo pilot?
No, I have a gambling partner who is very, very silent and doesn't like to have his name out there. And it's so important to have a partner because of the number of games that we bet together, and to get the games down as quickly as possible. Because as you know, and most gamblers know, John, that the lines on the Don Best screen move very quickly, and there's a lot of wise guys and sharp people out there competing to get the same number. So I find it very helpful to have a partner. I guess when you have two or more people wagering together, that's called a syndicate. So I guess I'm a very small syndicate, being that it's just one partner and I who make all the calls. And we've been doing pretty well together for about 10 years, John.
So far, so good here on the program. Ken Weitzner hitting 60% of his selections since the show's inception last September. I've got his record at 42-28-2 through 72 plays. And I saw it on the forum yesterday, Ken. You liked Old Dominion over Georgia State. You laid the spot with Old Dominion. Old Dominion won by double digits, 75-62. But I think you were a little lucky to get there. Old Dominion, a 9-point favorite, winning by 13. The score that I saw late in the game, Ken, had Old Dominion up by only 5 with 55 seconds left. It was 67-62 ODU. I thought you'd be hard-pressed to get there, but you did.
John, that game was never in doubt. Just look at the final score. I guess you would call that a front door cover. And once in a while, it goes your way that way. I've had a lot of games where when you're laying, you know, a lot of points, there'll be backdoor covers. But yes, ODU is very fortunate to win the game by 13 points. What's funny, John, is I have a couple of disgruntled employees or ex-disgruntled employees that have set up websites that basically track everything I do. And when ODU was up only one by halftime, they copied and pasted my entire thread as to, you know, why I liked ODU, making fun of the selection. And I noticed after the game was over, there were no more posts on that thread. So it's kind of funny that they thought after halftime the game was over. And that just goes to show that you never know in college basketball until the final whistle, you know, blows whether or not you're going to cover. I've seen so many meaningless threes at the end of the game that have caused gamblers to have harder strokes, and some of them were fortunate. But ODU's playing really good basketball. They lost a tough game to Northern Iowa a few days before that, when one player, namely number 5 on Northern Iowa, was hitting NBA threes from wherever he was shooting the ball from on the court. And although ODU lost, they did hang in there tough. They didn't play their best game at all. And it goes to show that, anything can happen on any given night because, Northern Iowa, goes out last night and couldn't hit a shot, you know, from anywhere. They lost to a horrible team at Evansville after, beating a very, very good ODU team. So we'll see what happens. I predict that if, the things go according to the way they are supposed to go, ODU now is in first place alone in the CAA. I believe if they make it to the, conference finals, they will squeeze by and get an at-large bid. But that's my opinion. Excuse me?
I see an RPI of 42, mentioned their record in the CAA, 14-3, an overall mark of 22-8. The good win is Georgetown. The bad loss is George Mason. That conference, Ken, that's received some respect in the past few years, the Colonial Athletic Association, due in large part to George Mason's good show a few years ago.
Also, let's not forget that ODU's out-of-conference schedule is one of the hardest and one of the toughest that is one of the toughest in the nation. And I think the committee is going to reward ODU for their tough out-of-conference schedule. And when their worst loss of the season is at George Mason, that speaks volumes about the fact that they really haven't laid down at all against a poor team. And that's important when the committee selects at-large bids. They don't want to see any horrible, horrible losses on a resume, such as what happened in Northern Iowa last night, I might add.
Yes, and you've got to be careful with those bad losses. Not only do they hurt your chances to make the tournament, but if you do make the tournament, the seed you receive could be disappointing. The selection committee, they love to stick it to the mid-majors. It seems they favor the big-time programs, and any chance you give them, if you're a mid-major, to knock you down that seeding ladder, they'll do it.
Ken, this year might be different, John. Look at the ACC. Their number two team in the ACC, Maryland, is not even ranked in the top 25. So with the fact that some of these bigger conferences having down years, you're going to get much more than three teams from the mid-majors as at-large bids this year, I predict.
Ken, why the love of Old Dominion? We know you're a graduate from there, but why do you follow the basketball program so closely? How closely do you follow it? Do you attend all home games? Do you travel with the team? Do you go on the road to watch ODU? And if they were to make the tournament, would you go to a regional site and watch Old Dominion play basketball live there?
Well, first of all, I am not a graduate of ODU. I just live really, really close to their campus. I've fallen in love with their team years ago. The shot heard around the world was in 1981. When some of you that are listening may remember a player by the name of Billy Mann. He actually stole the ball playing at DePaul, who had won 40 straight consecutive home games. They were ranked number one in the nation, and the player by the name of Billy Mann stole the ball with 7 seconds left, hit a layup, and won the game for ODU, which kind of put ODU on the map because they had just entered Division One basketball somewhere in the mid-70s, I believe, in 1976. As for me being an ODU fan, it doesn't get any bigger. I go to every home game. I do travel when the team plays in March Madness. The last time they were there, it was in Worcester, whatever, Massachusetts. And I saw them lose to Michigan State in a very competitive game several years ago in the first round. And I also traveled to the CAA conference championship games, which is held in Richmond, about 2 hours from where I live. We don't have any professional franchises here in Southern Virginia, so I just love ODU. I go to their practices, which are usually not open to the public, but being a big blue donator allows me to venture into places that other people can. I love the passion and the way that they play ball. They certainly aren't, you know, a top 25 team, but for a mid-major, year in and year out for the last 5 years, they've been a force to reckon with, especially at ODU. And in fact, I think they have the third longest home winning streak in Division I basketball. going into a game this Saturday against VCU. I believe ODU has won something like 23 consecutive home games, John, going back to last year. So there's a lot of support here for this team in Norfolk, Virginia.
I was fooled. I thought you were an ODU grad, but I know better. I know you went to Emory University. I guess it's your love of ODU that got me. And in this basketball time, I have you so closely connected with that program, Old Dominion, that I thought that you attended there. And you not only know Old Dominion basketball, you also follow the Colonial through your love of Old Dominion. You know that CAA better than most.
I would say that's true because I get to watch every team play when they come at ODU and try to beat us at home, and I get to see which teams are hot and which teams are not. And I've been telling people that have been listening to this show for the last month that George Mason is a fraud. I've used the fraud word, and they've lost 5 out of the last 6, John.
You're listening to Winning Wednesdays, John Kelly and Ken Weitzner, better known as The Shrink, on the gambling forum EOG.com. We have an interesting show planned for you today. Our featured guest is Scott Shetler, better known as Scotty, longtime Las Vegas bookmaker. He managed the book at the Stardust Hotel and Casino most of the 1980s. In fact, from 1983 to 1991, Scotty Shetler's name, maybe the biggest name in the race and sportsbook industry at that time. He has a new book out called We Were Wise Guys and Didn't Know It. He'll be here to promote that book and talk about the glory days of Nevada's race and sportsbook industry. Ken, what about your link to Las Vegas? I know you're more prominent in the offshore sports betting world than here in Las Vegas, but when's the first time you made a trip to Las Vegas? What are your earliest memories of what they once called the gambling capital of the world?
Well, I remember Vegas back in the 70s when I was a degenerate gambler, and I would go out there and, play slots. I would play blackjack and, of course, craps and lose every time. I kind of remember Vegas, though, more when it was not quite like today. And as many of my friends from Vegas will share, and I'm sure you're one of them, John, a lot of people miss the good old days before it's become this huge mecca that it's become. I liked it when it was a little bit smaller. And it was also a lot more friendly back then. But on the positive side, you do have these, huge, unbelievable, over-the-top hotels and casinos now that weren't there before. So there's positives and negatives about the changes. But change is good, and I've adapted to the changes. And I've got a lot of good friends out there, Fezzik being one of them, that I visit every time I make a trip to Vegas.
You have a trip planned for mid-March. In fact, the EOG Nation will be coming out in mid-March for the first 4 days of the college basketball tournament. That should be a grand time.
Yeah, I believe a thread or two or three has been started on EOG about the number of people that plan on attending this time. And it looks like we're going to have almost a semi-bash, if you will call it. And I'm grateful that a lot of the posters on EOG are able to make this trip. It should be a lot of fun, John. I look forward to seeing you as well.
It should be fun. And we have to stir up the crowd here in Las Vegas to join those who are coming from outside Nevada for the EOG party. That should be a good time, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You're calling it a semi-bash, Ken. I've never been to a bash sponsored by EOG. Tell me a little bit about the history of parties that are connected to different internet gambling sites. What's the biggest party you've ever been to or ever hosted?
The first RX Bash. I remember that so vividly because no one had ever done that before. And the owner of Bodog, Calvin Ayer, attended our first RX Bash, which was held at the Golden Nugget Hotel. And we had a blast. It was a lot of people that were very very into the prescription, and there were also people that weren't on the posting forum who attended as well. I believe even Jeff Haney was there, Buzz Daly was there. Who else was there? Rick Alec might have been there. A lot of good names and good people were there, and we finally got a chance to meet one another face-to-face rather than on the forums. And the biggest surprise I think most people found out were that posters are a lot nicer people when you meet them face-to-face than when they are behind a monitor and they don't have to be accountable for what they say. So I think everyone had a great time. And the next year, Bodog ended up copying that idea and just making it into a monumental event. And I believe they rented out the Rain as one of their places to have a get together, and they did it over the top, as Calvinier is known to do. So the RX Bash was the first, the original, and it was an idea I had been thinking about doing, and it worked. And to this day, I'm still grateful that we can have occasions like this March to get together. Even if we don't call it a bash, it's just fun to meet the forum posters face-to-face and talk shop with them.
Check out EOG.com for more information on that mid-March event. Ken, you were being nice when you say posters are a lot nicer when you meet them in person. You could have phrased it another way by saying posters are cowardly when hiding behind the computer screen or their keyboards, because at some sites, the problem's not as pervasive at EOG as it is other sites, but at some sites, you do have people throwing stones from the dark, and while I think the culture at EOG is a little different and getting better all the time, it just seems to me like people love to hide behind the screen name and attack.
Yes, and it gets old after a while. At first, I found it entertaining. They would write some things about yours truly that weren't very, very nice. And after a while, though, I think the intelligence and the average IQ of the poster has gone up, where now, you know, they're tired of reading, you know, oh, Ken sucks, or Ken is this, or Ken's drinking again, or whatever. They want to have fun when they go to a forum. They want to feel at home. They want to feel recognized and appreciated. And above all, they want respect. And I try to convey that to my moderators. And I think Ball Wonder, Blondie, and Mofa, me, just to name a few, do just that. They make newcomers feel warm and welcomed at EOG. And most importantly, if someone's going to give out a selection, and I really encourage gamblers to do more of that, you know, if they lose, at least they have the chutzpah to post it. And we shouldn't go attacking someone because they tried to be helpful. We should encourage more and more people to post picks. And that's why what's one of the main reasons why I get on there and I post my picks is I'm hoping that others will follow so that we have a greater chance at beating the bookmaker. If people are following certain conferences closely, then I would imagine they know more about that conference than I do. And I encourage that type of posting, and that's what we foster on EOG, John.
We'll step aside and take the first time out of the program. When we return, we'll be joined by Scott Shetler, former Las Vegas bookmaker, current author. His book, We Were Wise Guys and Didn't Know It, available now. We'll tell you how you can pick up that publication and talk with Scotty Shetler next here on Winning Wednesdays.
There's no question who the biggest start is when it comes to sports handicapping. It's Adam Meyer from AdamWins.com, the sports consultant to the stars. Go inside the numbers each week with AdamWins.com. Adam will supply you with all the information you need to make money this weekend. Call Adam at 800-355-5883 or go to AdamWins.com. That's 800-355-5883 or go to AdamWins.com.
Ready for true mobility? Bookmaker Mobile gives you a whole new way to wager, anytime, anywhere. Simply browsing WAP.bookmaker.com from your cell phone or PDA, you can start accessing the betting world. Placing a wager has never been this easy. Review open wagers, check out your history, or even check out your balance, all from the palm of your hand. Now, when, where, and how you bet is entirely up to you. Bookmaker.com, where the line originates.
The best in Internet talk radio.
A mind-bendingly ingenious plan to control the universe.
We're building the best Internet talk radio on the planet. TalkZone.com. Let's return to Winning Wednesdays on TalkZone. Once again, here are John Kelly and Ken Weitzner.
Back on Winning Wednesdays, John Kelly and Ken Weitzner, now joined by Scott Shetler, former Las Vegas bookmaker. He ruled the Stardust Race and Sportsbook for most of the 1980s. Scotty, good day and welcome to the program.
How you doing, John? Ken?
Good. I'm so glad you could join us. Really honored, too, because you talk about knowing the history of Nevada's race and sportsbook industry. There are not many who can tell the account quite like Scott Shetler. You arrived in town, Scotty, in 1968. What was the climate like back then?
It was hot. It was July. it was much, much different. I came to town. I had $18 in my pocket. Got a cheap room downtown. Didn't know a soul. Had no juice. Didn't know one soul. I had one name. I went to see this guy. It was Little Nicky. He owned Ace Cab at that time. Little Nicky Costanza from New Jersey. He sent me to see a gentleman named Jasper Special from, he was a New Yorker, exiled from New York, actually. And he had a restaurant, the Tower of Pizza. And I didn't even have enough money to go take a bus, so I walked from downtown, clear up past the dunes, where the dunes was, to the Tower of Pizza. It was on a Sunday. And I walked in the door. The place wasn't open yet. Jasper's behind the register. And he looks over his grainy glasses, and he says, "Can I help you?" We're the only people in the restaurant, by the way. I says, "Yeah, Little Nicky sent me." He says, "You might have a job for me." He says, "You want to work?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Go get a white jacket and go to work." I says, "Well, what do I do?" He says, "I don't care what you do. Just do something." So that's how I got started. Jasper was well-connected, very well-connected, if anybody's familiar with him. The Tower of Pizza was kind of a mobbed-up joint. People from all over, you know, different cities would come there and pay their respects to Jasper. And from there, it was a lucky break. I was on my way. Jasper opened a lot of doors for me.
Mm-hmm. That was in 68. I know in 1971 you got a job at Churchill Downs and met somebody named Bob Martin.
Well, yeah, Bob was in Churchill. When Bob left, a guy named Frank Hall, a Texas bookmaker, took over, and I actually went to work for Frank. I never worked for Bob, although I knew him. And we had, you know, I knew him, and I've been in his company, you know, quite a few times. And but I actually went to work for Frank Hall. He was the bookmaker at Churchill at that time in the sports, and Harry Gordon was on the other side in the horses. Harry actually owned the place. And it was, there was only six books in town at that time. They were all storefront books. There was no books in hotels. That was against the gaming board regulations. That was my first job as a legal bookmaker. Well, I wasn't a bookmaker. I started out as a board man. I was the flunky in the joint. I took care of the boards, the phones, and eventually I started writing tickets, blah, 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 you know.
What was the first casino, Scotty, that had a race and sports book as we know it?
The first one was the Union Plaza downtown. Now, that's where Bob went. Bob went, was out of commission for a while. Then he went to the Union Plaza in 76. Him and Johnny Quinn opened up the very first sports book in a hotel. That was Jackie Gaughan's Union Plaza. And the first one on the strip was the Stardust. Lefty Rosenthal opened that up. The very first one on the strip was the Stardust. And that didn't happen until 1976.
Did you have any contact with Frank Lefty Rosenthal?
I did. I never had contact with Frank, although when he left, I eventually took over what he created. It was very easy. He created the greatest sports book still to this day. Well, it's not there anymore. It's under the bulldozer, but I had it pretty nice. I just took over what he created. You know, I can't give myself any credit for it.
Stardust was, and Scotty's being modest there, Stardust was known as home of the official Las Vegas line. I've often said if they have a Sports Gambling Hall of Fame here in Nevada, Scotty would definitely be one of the original inductees. One thing you did create at the Stardust, Scotty, was the Stardust Lottery. That determined who could bet what and when. Tell me a little bit about the Stardust Lottery, how that came about in the 1970s or 80s.
Yeah, I took over the Stardust in 83. That's when the gaming board officially they took over the place, and they were looking for they were looking for managers, you know. So I was lucky enough to be offered that job. That's when Lefty and those guys left. lefty left, no pun intended. But I was from the old school, the old bookmaker school, and I booked the way I was brought up to back east, and it was very simple. You take bets, you pay the winners, and you know, with the loser's money, and hope there's enough left over. It wasn't that complicated. So, anyways, the old time people appreciated the old way to book, like I learned at Churchill, like I learned from Jasper, and that's the way I booked at the Stardust. I had the blessing of management. They told me to just go ahead and they knew I knew what I was doing. They let me do it. They didn't interfere. There was no bean counters bothered me, and if they did, upper management told me just ignore them. So that was a blessing. It was very easy. So we started putting out our own numbers. We actually made our own numbers right in the Stardust, and we put them up every morning at 8 o'clock, just like a bank. Well, that created so much business that we just couldn't handle it. We only had like 7 windows, and it created so much business we couldn't handle it. We tried all different kind of things, you know, making people stand back, and then it was like a 20-yard dash to the windows, or we put stanchions up, and they moved them, and, you know, we tried all kind of things. So eventually, what guys started paying, big bettors started paying stew bums to stand in front of the window like a day ahead of time, you know, to be first in line for tomorrow. So that's how much business we were doing. So eventually, one day, a guy named Crazy Jim, and that's his real name, by the way. It's on his driver's license. He got his name changed. He's from Wisconsin. He had his name changed to Crazy Jim. He also ran for governor of Wisconsin and didn't make it, by the way. But he says he was first in line. So he says, I'm going to go over to McDonald's and get a coffee. So he went over to McDonald's to get a coffee, come back, got in front of the line again. And the guy behind him says, hey, buddy, you know, you better get, you know, go to the back of the line. This is my spot. Crazy Jim says, oh, no, I was here first. I just went to get a coffee. The guy says, oh, yeah. Jim says, yeah. He opened up his coat. There's a pistol. Guy says, yeah, you're first, you know. So from that day on, we had to come up with something. So a kid that worked for me, Richard Saber, he's the one that actually had the idea of making the lottery. You know, it was you come in the morning before we open, you sign your name on a sheet, we draw cards to see who's first, who's second, who's third, and that kind of solved the problem.
And that's, of course, before the days of the Internet, before the explosion of the offshore industry.
That was way before that. Yeah, we're talking before that. We actually made our own numbers. That was the draw.
Did you have any opinions from the outlaw line?
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a couple guys working for me. They were actually on the payroll. It wasn't hidden. They were on the payroll. One was Jerry the Hat. Also known as Greasy Jerry. He's gone now. He was very, very, very smart. He had the ability to know which way numbers would go, which he could gauge the public. I hired Roxy Roxborough. He was more mainstream, suit and tie and all that kind of stuff. I had a guy named Bobby the Owl, believe it or not. And eventually I just paid Bobby to stay away because he was too disruptive. His job, he got a nickel a week, and his only job restriction was he can't come to work. He had to stay home and call in. I had a guy named Jeff Garrett helping me, and of course myself. And I hired all smart guys. I didn't hire anybody west of the Mississippi. Everybody I hired was from back east. We all knew how to make numbers, and it was just a conglomeration of guys, and we put out pretty decent numbers.
Our guest today is Scott Shetler. He's the author of the new book titled "We Were Wise Guys and Didn't Know It." What about some of the gamblers that you crossed paths with in the 70s and 80s? Did you ever have an opportunity to meet Billy Walters?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh sure. Yeah, I've met Billy quite a few times. He's a misunderstood guy. He's very charitable. He donates very, very well to the Opportunity Village here in town, and he's just a little bit smarter than everybody else. You know, he's just a little bit. We had a lot of what they call runners. A lot of guys would bet back east, and then they would bet the opposite side with us, or take leads with us. In other words, they would anticipate which way the numbers would go. So a lot of the guys that bet with us actually weren't betting to win. That was the beauty of the thing. A lot of the guys hoped that we won because they bet bigger money other places on the other side. They were taking leads with us in the morning. Some of the guys had bet, oh, easy, $100,000 in the morning before other places opened up, okay? And then they would bet in hoping that we would win that bet while they would go around town and cherry-pick the other places that just copied our numbers.
I know a gentleman named Sam Brown. He was a fixture at the Stardust during your time there.
Sam Brown was a fixture long before I got here. Sam Brown, every place you went to, you turned around and there was Sam Brown. He had the ability. He had more outs. That means he had more bookmakers he could call than any living human. Sam had hundreds of bets a day, knew exactly what he had on each game at what number. And he had the ability to beat other people to the number. He knew which way they were going to go, and he was freaky. He just absolutely was the best earner. Sam didn't know if a basketball was round or square, but he knew which side the wise guys would be on, and he knew who to follow at what time. He was just a genius.
Ken Weister, that sounds like a little bit what you do. Not that you don't know the game of basketball, but you like the information. You like to follow wise guys.
I was chuckling because that's exactly what I do. I couldn't name you know, most players on these Division I basketball teams, but I can name you line movement, and I'm pretty good at line movement, and that's what counts. And the connections that I have are second to no one in this industry. I'm very privileged to be able to know the line movement ahead of time, and I take advantage of it. And I also love the fact that Scotty was talking about the fake moves that I'm so familiar with. It still goes on today where Billy will have, you know, his runners, you know, make some blatant opposite phony plays into books like Chris, because a lot of clone books on the Don Best screen will copy the move, and then he comes back later and bets twice or three times the amount on the other side. It's a game of cat and mouse, and I'm so glad Scott pointed that out.
Hello?
Yes, Scotty.
Yeah, that was exactly what happened with us. The guys would come in the morning, they would make plays, all the other books in town would wait till we put our numbers up. About an hour later at 9 o'clock, they would copy our numbers, and they would put our numbers up, figuring, well, the Stardust took all the hits, these numbers are solid, and they would put the numbers up. Well, that's just what the wise guys wanted in the morning. Now they had 20 books around town. They could just go and cherry-pick the other side. So what happened at the end of the day, the guys that copied our numbers had one-way action. They had to win the game, okay? And they're trying to beat the sharpest guys in town. Whereas we had two-way action on the way up and on the way back, okay? The only hazard we just earned tremendous juice. The only hazard we had was getting middled, but getting middled to me was not a bad word, because nobody ever middled a game and says, "Hi, I got your money. I'm quitting. I'll never bet again." Nah, they just took the money, held it overnight, and if they didn't spend it, they came back the next day and give it right back. So, you know, we were in it for the long haul. We didn't care about getting middled or losing for a day or two, or you know.
And that's not the philosophy of today's bookmakers.
No,
Scotty,
No. That wasn't even the philosophy then. Most bookmakers then thought that you had to win. They thought you had to beat the customer. You didn't. All you had to do was get money on both sides of a game and hope it didn't get, you know, hope you didn't get middled. You know, they were under the philosophy that if you wrote a ticket and the guy won, that money's gone. It's not gone. It's with us, it never even left the building. We gave the guys safe deposit boxes, you know, so they could put their money in at night. They come back in the morning and got it. Didn't even leave the building.
Let's talk about some other noteworthy gamblers, Scotty. We mentioned Billy Walters, Sam Brown, Stu Unger, a big-time poker player who loved
sports. Stu was poor Stu. He's gone now, but Stu would be over in the Stardust poker room, which was very popular, and he'd come over and he'd look up and down the board, give me this, give me that. He didn't even know what the heck he was doing. He didn't even know what the season was, basketball, football. He'd end up with the $100,000 laid down and go back and play poker. Then he'd come back later and see if he won or lost. He just wanted the action. Billy Baxter, we took off Billy Baxter. Many big players, big offices, the computer, we took off the computer, the koshers, all the big offices back then. We took them all off. And once again, they weren't trying to beat us. They hoped, a lot of them hoped we win because, you know, like Ken said, you know, Billy would come back. They'd put out phony games purposely trying to move the number because people followed us so closely. In other books, unknowingly, you know, would put the phony moves up, and then they could, these guys would just come and beat their brains in.
Do you remember a guy nicknamed Dick the Pick?
Oh, sure, Dick the Pick. Yeah, he's over in Thailand now. Dick was there's quite a few of the guys over in Thailand. Chuck Schaap, that was a great NBA totals guy. Roxy is over in Thailand now. Dick the Pick. Yeah, a lot of those guys. Yeah.
There's a poster at EOG, you know, Dinosaur, who's also in Thailand. A few other names I want to throw at you, Scotty. You mentioned Jerry the Hat. What about a gentleman nicknamed the Crab?
Oh, Bruce. Bruce the Crab. Yeah, he was in town. I got a job in Reno. I opened a book in Reno at the Cal Neva. I opened it up, and Bruce followed me up there. It was easy pickings for him because there wasn't that many sharp guys up there. So Bruce just beat our brains in. He had a, for better lack of a better word, we'll call it a system. He beat our brains in, and I was really getting frustrated. And I called Bob Martin, and I called Ray Vera, and just called everybody and explained what was going on. They said, well, you got to take this guy off because he was all betting. All he did bet was parlays. And anyways, Bruce had a system. He later explained to me what it was, and it was pretty ingenious. But Bruce beat our brains in. He had a friend named Billy. Bruce quit. He's probably the only guy I know to quit winners. He quit. Him and Billy took a sabbatical around the country, went to every major league ballpark and saw a baseball game. And Bruce, later on, the owner of the Cal Neva came to me and says, you know, he says, we got a $60,000 ticket here that's uncashed on the Boston Celtics to win the NBA. That must have been 86 or 88 somewhere, 89 or 90, right around there. And I said, oh, that's got to be Bruce the Crab. And he never cashed it for months and months. And finally he cashed it, and I said, Bruce, weren't you worried? He says, nah. He says, I knew you'd stand by it. I said, well, yeah, sure.
You mentioned his ingenious system. Care to share that parlay system to our listeners?
You know, I think he's still in action, although he denies it. He says he never made another bet, but I think he does because he still hangs around books. So I don't believe in systems, but just out of respect for Bruce, I just want to kind of let him have it for himself, okay?
That is fair. And we're talking with Scotty Shetler, talking about his new book, We Were Wise Guys and Didn't Know It. I'm sure some of these stories that he's telling now and a whole lot more are in that book that sells for $15. It's available at Amazon.com, or you can go to the website EOG.com. There he started a thread titled The Book Is Out, and you can pick up the book by clicking on a link in that thread. Again, the book is titled We Were Wise Guys and Didn't Know It. It sells for $15. Tell me a little bit about the book publishing business, Scotty. I know you said you're a newcomer. You don't have a lot of experience.
I got no clue. I was on the forums and EOG and the prescription and all that for a long time, and the guys just lapped up all these old stories. And they kept saying, you got to write a book. So I did. You know, I didn't even... like I said, I flunked English in high school, so I just wrote this book in my own words, which I'm sure people will appreciate. I published it myself. You know, the first two guys I went to with it says, well, you got to do this, you got to do that. I said, the heck with you. You know, I don't need you. So I published it myself, and it's out. And I've, like Navin Johnson said, and I've already made 200 big ones, you know.
Scotty, thanks for your time. Ken, I'm sure you have some questions for the legendary Las Vegas bookmaker, Scott Shetler.
Scotty, yeah, I'm so grateful you're on the show today. One of our guests from last week and an avid poster at EOG named The Winkster posted a question that he wanted me to ask of you. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to repeat The Winkster's question.
Sure.
He asks, could you and would you like to be a sportsbook manager today in Vegas And then he puts in parenthesis, with all of the low limits and books run by corporate bean counters, I'm willing to take large bets, unlike the day when you used to run the Stardust, and large bets were no problem.
I couldn't do it. I wouldn't last an hour. The only people I ever worked for were individuals, gamblers. I never worked for a big corporation. The only corporation I worked for was Samstown, and there I had a lot of juice, and they just told me to do what I wanted to do. I always worked for individuals, Joe Sliman, Warren Nelson, you know, gamblers. And they understood what was going on and didn't bother me. But today I couldn't do it. I couldn't answer to I couldn't wear a suit and tie, and I don't know how to shake my head up and down in the yes fashion, you know. I just couldn't do it.
But okay, I have one question of my own that I want to get to before we end this segment.
Sure.
And since you were privy to meeting a lot of the big names in Vegas, who would you name as your top three most successful sports bettors during the entire span of, let's just say, the last three decades that you've been around? Who would you rate 1, 2, and 3?
I'm going to lump them all together. I'm going to make it an entry. Three-horse entry. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay. The three-horse entry would be Ray Vera. He's from Canton, Ohio. They call him the Spaniard. Another one would be Chuck Schaap, who was just absolutely unbeatable in the NBA. And the third one would be Sam Brown, who probably earned more. He was successful. So he was successful not by picking winners, by earning. Chuck and Ray actually beat the line. They actually went up against the line with their own opinion and beat it. So that's a three-horse entry. Out
Thank
of those
you.
Three, my top yes. would be Ray Vera.
Where does Billy Walters fall on your list?
Well, Billy's right there, of course. Let's make it a four-horse entry. Thank you. Let's make it a four-horse entry. You know, they're all different. They all have different MOs. Billy made bushels of money, you know, by... Well, Billy was a good handicapper. However he did it, who knows? But he was a very good handicapper. He actually beat the bookmaker, whereas Sam Brown didn't beat the bookmaker. He just earned.
And let me extend that theme, if I could, Scotty. The great question, Shrink, about the top gamblers. What about the top bookmakers, Scotty? Yourself, of course, not included. If you were to handicap the bookmakers and list the top three or four there in no particular order, we've mentioned names like Harry Gordon,
You're talking about legal bookmakers licensed in Las Vegas?
Let's go with the legal bookmakers.
Yeah, because I wouldn't put out any other names. The top bookmakers were, and this very infamous, Gary Austin, till he, you know, had his head screwed on, right? Gary Austin, Frank Hall and Bob Martin, of course, Joe Sliman, Johnny Quinn. There was another guy that worked for Johnny Quinn. He's from Oklahoma. I forget his name right now. Don't get old. You'll forget names. The kid across the street at the Riviera, Jack Lysite.
Where is Jack today, Scotty? Do you know where Jack Lysite is today?
As far as I know, Jack is in Costa Rica, as far as I know.
And of course, there was an independent bookmaker further down the strip from you. Gene Mayday was running.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Gene. Thank you. Gene Mayday. How could I forget Gene? Thank you. Yeah.
And Jimmy Vaccaro, of course.
Jimmy was good. Jimmy took big money at the Mirage. Jimmy took big money at the Mirage. And then later he went, where'd he go, the Bellagio? He took money at the Mirage. He worked for Steve Wynn. Jimmy opened up next to me on Convention Center Drive, his very first job, and he was a stone rookie. He really didn't know that much about bookmaking, but he sure learned quick. He opened up next to me at the Royal Inn, owned by Jackie Gaughan, on Convention Center Drive, and I was working right next door for Joe Sliman at the Royal Casino, and people still get those two confused. Joe Sliman took more money than any living human. He was just out of this world. And eventually it cost him because he got busted. But Jimmy opened up next door. He would come over, and we would let him come behind the counter, and He learned real quick. Jeremy learned good, and he learned real quick. Jeremy's a good friend of mine. I got a lot of respect for him.
Scotty, thanks so much for the time today, and good luck with the book. Again, We Were Wise Guys and Didn't Know It. It sells for $15. It's available at Amazon.com, or you can check out the website, EOG.com, and look at that thread titled, The Book is Out. Scotty, best of luck in all you do.
I need luck. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Scotty.
Okay.
Bye. Scott Shetler on the program. We'll step aside and take the final time out of the show. Basketball selections. Ken has three plays that he'll release. I like a side in that Utah Air Force game. We'll talk about that Mountain West Conference next when we return here on Winning Wednesdays.
Old school meets new school. You want a bookmaker you can trust, one that's established, secure, and offers more per play. You want bookmaker.com. At bookmaker.com, you can win big and play safe 24/7, 365. From international sports to all styles of racing to casino games and poker tournaments, play with confidence at bookmaker.com. Sign up today and get a 20% bonus and earn free plays with our exclusive loyalty program. Bookmaker.com, where the line originates.
There's no question who the biggest start is when it comes to sports handicapping. It's Adam Meyer from AdamWins.com, the sports consultant to the stars. Go inside the numbers each week with AdamWins.com. Adam will supply you with all the information you need to make money this weekend. Call Adam at 800-355-5883 or go to AdamWins.com. That's 800-355-5883 or go to AdamWins.com.
You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio. Time for more Winning Wednesdays. Here are John Kelly and Ken Weitzner.
And we are back on Winning Wednesdays. Job well done by Scott Shetler. I'm sure next Wednesday's guest will also be interesting. His name is Ron Boyles. Ron is a serious college basketball handicapper. I think you will appreciate the commentary from Ron Boyles next Wednesday. We'll ask him for selections as well and strategies to beating college basketball in the month of March. Ron lives on the East Coast part of the year, comes to Las Vegas during the college basketball season, and he's a serious gambler, Ken. I know he was at the M the other day, and the M is now really the like the old days in Las Vegas. The M is very liberal with their wagering limits. And they're taking big money from gamblers of all sorts. Ron Boyles stepped to the window at the M the other day and asked if they would take $5,000 on a college basketball game. And the gentleman behind the counter said, do you want $10,000?
That's great to hear that finally, there's a sports book in Vegas that's willing to take large bets to cater to the gamblers that, you know, that live in Vegas and love to bet on sports. And I applaud them, and I look forward to giving them some action when I come down next month in Las Vegas for our get-together with EOG posters.
And again, that's the M, and that's where Ron Boyles is playing these days. He'll be our guest next Wednesday. Later in the month of March, we'll visit with Barry Holthouse, who will be talking college hoops. Elf Mosqueda is scheduled to be on the program in early April. He'll be previewing the Masters for us. Dave Koken talking baseball. Our guest last week, the Winkster, said you've got to recruit Koken before the baseball season. That's what we've done. And also Daily Racing Form publisher Steve Crist will be on in late April previewing the Kentucky Derby. Ken, any interest in the Olympics? Have you been watching on NBC and the different NBC platforms, the Olympic coverage, and any wagering on the Olympics for you?
I just got to tell you, John, I love the Winter Olympics. I have not missed a night. And my favorite event was last night, and it's the women's figure skating. And what I saw, and I had to stay up late to watch it, was this Olympic figure skater named Kim Yuna, who's from Korea. And they did what's called the short version or the short program. And not only did she just do a great job, she set an Olympic record and blew away her competitors with a flawless performance. And I understand she's a national hero in Korea. And it's just so beautiful for me to watch women figure skating. And if you thought Nancy Kerrigan or some of the other United States figure skaters we've had in the past were good, this woman is the greatest of all time.
That's been the big story the past 7 or 10 days, the Vancouver games. What about the big story last Friday, Ken? Did you check out Friday morning's press conference? Or at least it was called a press conference. It felt more like a church service to me. Did you see the Tiger Woods apology, and what are your thoughts on Tiger?
Time will tell. I made a post, and being that I've been through some personal issues as Tiger, I'm pulling for him. I'm not going to cast any stones. I know a lot of men are unfaithful, and it would be hypocritical of me to attack Tiger. I wish him well, and I hope he recovers from the problems he's having.
Let's get to the selections on the program. I've got one. Ken has three. I'll lead off with my play, trying to go 17-7-1 on the program. Nice run in the months of January and February here. I love college basketball, and I focus on the Mountain West Conference, among others. I like Utah on the road, -5.5 over Air Force. It's game number 789-790. Betting number 789, Utah -5.5 over Air Force. A lot of reasons to like this bet. In the month of February, Ken, I always look for young basketball teams because they have the most upside. They're the ones that are improving and are really playing better than their power ratings many times. And Utah is one of those teams. They're a deep club that's getting better with experience. I like the freshman guard, Marshall Henderson. The program says he's 6'2". I know our EOG poster, Tuckman, says that Henderson's a lot shorter than that. Maybe he'll grow to be 6'2", but he is a gamer. That's what I like about Marshall Henderson. He can shoot the three ball, and he's a fierce competitor. I also like Carlin Brown, who's coming off the bench these days for Utah, and Luka Doncic. Some excellent backcourt play from Utah, and also Tavita, a backup player for Utah. And depth is critical, I think, this time of year in basketball, because not only makes your practices more productive when you have 10 or 12 healthy players, but also other teams wear down the fatigue of the season. And Air Force is a team that might be wearing down. Even though they hung in last Saturday against New Mexico, that was more about New Mexico laying down than Air Force playing well. So I'm going to take Utah on the road, -5.5 over Air Force. That's my top play on the Wednesday card. Ken, I know you have three plays for us. How about the first of three selections?
Before I get to my selections, I also want to congratulate you, John, for posting five plays on Saturday, winning 4 out of 5 on EOG. For those listening to the show, John Kelly is very humble, and he's an excellent handicapper, and I hope he comes back to post some more plays, not only on Winning Wednesdays, but on the forum so that our gamblers can make money. Now, getting to my three plays, I'm going to focus on what I know best, which is the CAA. And one game that really stuck out to me, apparently it did to other people too, is game number 728. Delaware is now a 3-point underdog at home, playing against the fraud, George Mason. I've been telling everyone about this fraudulent team now for several weeks, and they've proven to be a fraud. They've lost 5 out of their last 6 games against some poor teams, I might add. They lost at Georgia State. They lost at Drexel. They lost at home to William & Mary. They lost at home to College of Charlestown. The only game they won out of their last 6 games was at home, and it took them overtime to do it. So this is not the same George Mason team that people are accustomed to. And something that's very interesting is to follow who the public is on. And there's a site out there called the Daily Spread, and there's 85% of the public bets as of this broadcast are on George Mason, yet the line is moving the other way. That tells me that, you know, the sharps really, really love this game, because they're not only offsetting the public money, they're dominating it and moving this line that started at 5 all the way down to 3. And I'm also starting to see 2.5s pop up. This is a game that George Mason had trouble winning when they were better. They lost the last 2 years at Delaware, and that was a much better George Mason team, losing in 2008 and 2009. So they have trouble in Delaware. I expect them to lose tonight. So getting 3 points is a gift to me.
Betting number 728, Delaware, +3 over George Mason. The first of three plays from Ken Weissner. The second and third plays, Ken, come as an entry.
They sure do, and it's not a popular one. We're going to look at 752, William & Mary playing at home against Towson. William and Mary has a lot to play for right now as they're battling for either a number two, number three, or a number four seed, depending on what happens this last week in the CAA. So this is a really big game for William and Mary, and they come in playing quite well. This is a team that has overachieved all year, and they've done it with a variety of weapons. They give everybody trouble, and they're tough at home. They have good defense, and I expect them to play well tonight. It's their senior night as well, and Towson just stinks. This is a play also against how badly Towson performs on the road. They're 2-11 on the road. They've only had two victories all year on the road, and those were against the weak teams in the CAA, the two last-place teams, UNC Wilmington and Delaware. And this is their third consecutive road game, so they're kind of weary right now, and they've lost their first two road games. So I expect this game to be easily a win for William and Mary. And the reason I like the under, which you usually don't like to go taking an under with so many points, is that in the last nine times William and Mary has played, the total has gone under 134. So I don't see anything changing tonight, because if William and Mary plays their typical strong defense, which is a constant, they should be able to not only cover the 14 points, but they're just too much, and they're overmatched, and Towson is way overmatched playing against this William and Mary team. So unlike most players that like to go with the over and a favorite like this, I think this is one of the exceptions where both the favorite and the under look awfully good to me. So those are my three selections, John.
The favorite and the under in the William and Mary Towson game. William and Mary minus 14 and under the total of 134. Earlier, the shrink gave us Delaware plus 3 over George Mason. I'm on Utah minus 5.5 over Air Force. Ken, last week we were 3-1. Let's go one better this week. Let's try to sweep the card and go 4-4. We'll be back next Wednesday with the high-stakes sports gambler Ron Boyle. Excellent with college basketball information. He'll be an excellent guest on next week's program. That'll wrap up our show. For Ken Weitzner, I'm John Kelly. Special thanks to Scotty Shetler. Chat with you again next Wednesday here on Winning Wednesdays.